This show was first broadcast on Free FM 89.0, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access radio station. For more information on our station and our wide range of programs, visit freefm.org.nz.
And I believe with all of my heart that it is a contributing factor to our juvenile delinquency of today. I 100% believe it. Why I believe that is because I know how it feels when you sing it. I know the lost position that you get into in the beat.
Gray, and this is A Sonic Youth, your weekly half-hour guide into the great expanse of modern indie and alt-rock, classic albums, new releases, and unearthed gems. This week, a look at the greatest alternative and indie rock songs about sport. This opening track is not about sport, but Booker T's Soul Limbo will always be synonymous with the sport of cricket, due to its place as the opening song for BBC Test Match Cricket. Cricket is my favourite sport, and so we start with two tracks from this corner of the world about that very sport. New Zealand, when considering its population and small domestic system, are chronic punches above their weight in the sport. But, as much as it pains me to say it, and despite all the cheating, throughout history, the Australians are the greatest cricketing country, and their greatest player, the greatest player, perhaps the greatest sportsman ever, is of course Sir Don Bradman. Unlike some other sports, it's easy to quantify his brilliance. Bear with me here. Each time a batter goes out to bat in Test cricket, they'll score a number of runs, which then gives them an average. So if you score 0 and 100, you'll have an average of 50. A good player averages 35 to 40. An excellent player, who will likely keep selected for their team at any time they're fit, will average 40 to 50. Almost anyone who averages 50 or more over the course of a full career will be a generational legend who will be revered for years to come. Our two greatest batters in New Zealand, Williamson and Crowe, average 55 and 45. The god of Indian cricket, Tendulkar, averages 54, Virat Kohli 47 and Steve Smith 56. Currently only 5 players in history have made it into the 60s, and 3 of those have some strong mitigating factors. So a test average of 50 is incredible, and the 15 run difference between averaging 35 and 50 is enough to go from uncertainty about your place in the side to a page at the front of the history books. So any guesses on what Bradman averaged? 70? 80? Could he have even managed 90? Famously, Bradman averaged 99.94, failing to get the 4 runs needed to reach the 100 average in his final game. This is important context to understand the praise heaped on him by the greatest cricket song there is, Paul Kelly's Bradman. First released in 1987, as the B-side of a split single with Paul Kelly and the Coloured Girls, here's Bradman.
Sydney 1926. This is the story of a man, just a kid in from the sticks, just a kid with a plan. St. George took a gamble, played him in first grade. Pretty soon that young man showed them how to flash the blade. And at the age of 19, he was playing for the state. From Adelaide to Brisbane, the runs did not abate. He hit 'em hard, he hit 'em straight. He's more than just a batsman, but something like a tide. more than just one man he could take on any side. They always came for Bradman, his fortune used to hide in the palm of his hand. In the palm of his hand. A team came out from England. Wally Hammond wore his felt hat like a chief. All through the summer of 28-29, they gave the green caps no relief. Some reputations came to grief. They say the darkest hour is right before the dawn. And in the hour of greatest slaughter, the great avenger has been born. But who then could have seen the shape of things to come? In Bradman's first test, he went for 18 and for 1. They dropped him like a gun. Now Big Morris Tate was the trickiest of them all, and a man with a wisecracking habit. But there's one crack that won't stop ringing in his ears. Hey Whitey, that's my rabbit. Bradman never forgot it. It was more than just a batsman, it was something like a tide. More than just one man, he was a match for any side. Fathers took their sons, cause fortune used to hide in the palm of his hand. In the palm of his hand. La 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 la. England, 1930, and the sea burst into flower. All of Jackson's grace failed him. It was Bradman was the power. He murdered them in Yorkshire. He danced for them in Kent. He laughed at them in Leicestershire. Leeds was an event. 300 runs he took and rewrote all the books. That really knocked those gents. The critics could not comprehend this nonchalant phenomenon. Why, this man is a machine, they said. Even his friends say he isn't human. Even friends have to cut something. There's more than just a batsman, there's something like a tide. More than just one man, he was half the side. Fathers took their sons, cause fortune used to hide in the palm of his hand. In the palm of his hand. Summer 1932, and Captain Douglas had a plan. When Law would bolt to Bradman, it was more than man to man. And State Adelaide nearly boiled over as rage ruled over sense. When Bert Oldfield hit the ground, they nearly jumped the fence. Now Bill Woodfill was as fine a man as ever went to wicket, and the bruises on his body that day showed that he could stick it. But to this day he's still quoted, and only he could wear it. There's two sides out there today, and only one of them's playing cricket.
This is a Sonic Youth. This week it's all about sport, and that was Paul Kelly with Bradman. Our next cricket song is distinctly Kiwi, about one of our team's greatest test match victories. The song is called Carisbrook, by the band The Nai Nai Express. The Nai Nai Express is named after the nickname given to Test bowler Ewan Chatfield. Chatfield, batting at number 11, made his highest Test score alongside Jeremy Coney's century in the final innings of an iconic Test match held at Dunedin's Carisbrook ground in 1985. Against a strong Pakistani team, featuring a rampant young Wassim Akram, who earned 10 wickets in the game. The pair combined to get the team across the line on the final day. In 2018, a band named after Chatfield released their self-titled album, led by the heavily Flying Nun-influenced track Carisbrook. This is a brilliant song by itself, with the cricketing references removed, a powerful and upbeat alt-rocker. But with the iconic backstory, it becomes one of the great New Zealand alt-rock songs, especially with the awesome addition of clips of commentary from the game.
Needing a man, there's plenty of runs
That was the Nainai Express with Harris Brook. From my favourite sport to my second favourite, motorsport. If there's one region of the world where motorsport is most revered, it's the American South. NASCAR, emerging from gangs of moonshine runners racing their modified cars, is a sport deeply rooted in the Southern thing. And like so many pieces of the Southern identity, it's full of rich stories. If there's one band who can tell stories of the South, it's the Drive-By Truckers. Their 2004 record, The Dirty South, is all about that concept, telling stories good and bad about the region. From Patterson Hood's tracks about the tragedy of tornadoes, the corrupt Sheriff Buford Pusser, or Southern Gangs, to Jason Isbell putting a new gloss on the iconic tale of John Henry, to Mike Cooley writing about the Million Dollar Quartet of Elvis, Perkins, Lee Lewis, and Cash. It's an album full of great storytelling. And another standout is Mike Cooley's track Daddy's Cup, a song about grassroots motorsports and the relationship between father and son.
Well, before I could walk, I had a wrench in my hand. I was my mama's little angel, my daddy's second chance. He went end over end. The first year he went pro, and he lost part of his eyesight, so he couldn't race no more. He never lost his touch when he got under a hood. He knew how to make them run. He knew one day he would see his name in Victory Lane and engraved on that cup, just like all them other crazy fools racing in their blood. He'd put me on his lap when he'd drive and I'd take the wheel, and he'd say, "What do you think about that, son? How does she feel?" You just wiggle them little legs, get long enough to reach the gas. Once you put her on the floor one time, there ain't no turning back. Every Saturday he'd take me out to the garage. He'd take an empty bucket, fill it full of engine parts. He'd sit me down and pour them out in front of me on the floor. I'd have to tell him what each one was and what each one was for. We'd jump in his old car and go down to the race that night. He'd tell me what each driver was doing wrong, what each one did right. He could always pick the winner before they ever took a curve. Number three might have the car, but 43's got the nerve. Well, before I turned 18, Daddy said, "Now pretty soon you'll be old enough to race, but I'm gonna leave it up to you. Taught you all about it, taught you everything I know. You gotta have a car to do it, and you gotta work and buy your own." Nobody kept them any longer. Then they kept a pair of shoes. They started showing up at every used car lot in town. A V8 on a go-kart, easy terms, no money down. Me and Daddy and my uncle took her home and we tore her down. Checked her out real good, cleaned her up and bored her out. Took out all the seats, pulled the carpet off the floor, knocked out all the glass, and we welded up the doors. Well, the first time that I raced, my qualifying was a shame. I started out way in the back and came back about the same. Pulled her in the pit, couldn't look my daddy in the eye. He said, "If you quit now, son, it's gonna haunt you all your life." See, it ain't about the money or even being number one. You gotta know when it's all over, you did the best you could have done. And knowing that it's in you and you never let it out is worse than blowing any engine or any wreck you'll ever have. Since then I wrecked a bunch of cars and I broke a bunch of bones. It's anybody's race out there and I learned to run my own. I'd shove them in the wall and I'd hit them from behind. I'd let them know that I was there. I'd let them know that track was mine. It's been several years since my daddy passed away, but his picture's on my dash every time I go to race. I lost more than I won, but I ain't gonna give up till they put me in the ground and daddy's name is on that cup.
Drive by truckers with Daddy's Cup. From my favorite sports to one I know pretty much nothing about, baseball. A group of people who certainly do know about baseball are the supergroup The Baseball Project. They were formed in 2007 and feature the likes of REM's Peter Buck and Mike Mills and the Dream Syndicate's Steve Wynn. They've released four studio albums with tracks all about baseball. The second album, 2011's Volume 2, High and Inside, contains the track Don't Call Them Twinkies. It features Craig Finn, the lead singer of one of my favourite bands, The Hold Steady. His distinctive talk-sing style lends itself perfectly to the storytelling song, which to me sounds a lot like a Hold Steady track.
I wasn't quite alive yet, but I'm told they gave the MVP to Zolio Versailles. Oliva hit the singles, and Harmon hit the homers. Marquette Grant won 20 games, and they didn't play in a dome yet. The Dodgers came to Bloomington to play for the World Series. The Twins took the first two. You can even ask Vin Scully. But Sandy Koufax proved to be a bit too much to crack. And the Twins went down in seven, but they vowed that they'd be back. From Nicollet to Hennepin, from St. Paul to St. Cloud, the Minnesota Twins are making Minnesotans proud. And we don't buy our titles, so our summer's where we stay. But these are grown men.
These are grown men.
These are heroes. Please don't call them Twinkies. In the fall of 87, I was pretty much in heaven. I got my license and a girlfriend, the Twins had won a pennant. I prayed more in the dome than I ever did at church. Kirby Puckett had the smile, Ken Herbick had the smirk. But first we tamed the Tigers, then we were dealt the cards. And they came to the Twin Cities to try to make sense of our part. It was loud and it was close, and it went to seven games. But the Twins took home the title and that sweet music played. Down into the loop from the south side of downtown, Minnesota Twins are making Minnesota proud. So hey, let's make some noise. Come on, wave those homer hankies. These are grown men.
These are grown men.
These are heroes. Please don't call them Twinkies.
Thank you. 91, the Twins were once again on top. We faced Atlanta in the series, and they thought that they were hot. I've never seen nothing so lame as that Fonda hawk chop. But we were up against the ropes when Kirby called a shot. And as he ran around the bases, smiling, pumping fists, we all knew that he had won it. That was only just game six. And the next night, Jack Morris came and made his hometown proud. You should watch it in slow motion. Rocket was clearly out. From Mankato to Brainerd, from Burnsville to Bemidji, now we're playing outdoor baseball, and that's the way it should be. Raise a toast to Kirby Puckett, raise another to Tom Kelly, for the Minnesota Twins. So let's not call them Twinkies. We got Justin, we got Joe. That's enough reason to party. We don't buy our titles, but we still won two World Series. So grab yourself.
Thanks for listening to A Sonic Youth. This show is made with support from Free FM, Hamilton's access media station, and New Zealand On Air. For more of the greatest indie and alt rock, check out the back catalogue and future shows on Apple Podcasts and freefm.org.nz. And give me a follow on Facebook and Insta at A Sonic Youth Podcast. Remember to support the artists you love, and I'll see you next week.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.